All right, I'm really sorry for our late start. So we're going to do a shortened version of the class today. We're just going to study one pasuk, one verse. The fourth reading of Parshas Vayechi begins with Yaakov Avinu gathering his children, and he begins to bless them. He says he's going to look deeply into the future and see the kind of blessings that each one of them needs. Reuven is severely castigated. Yaakov says, "You were my first. You should have been the one who was Reish V'dishin for all good things, but unfortunately you displayed severe character flaws, and as such, it's not going to be you. This is not something which the Reubenite tribe is going to be able to bring about." Shimon and Levi, Yaakov is still upset at the way they behaved, or more so about the anger they displayed. And then he turns to Yehuda. And Yehuda, verse 8, already begins to back away. He said, uh-oh, if this is what Reuven, Shimon, and Levi did, and they didn't do anything nearly so egregious, I'm really going to be in trouble now. The story of Tamar is going to be brought up. And so Yehuda begins to back away. And Yaakov calls him back. He says, don't back away. Your brothers will praise you. Your enemies will flee before you. Your brothers, the children of your father, will bow before you. And this he refers, of course, to all of the Shvatim who are of the same father, but not the same mother. And the Sephardim says, this is to emphasize in the beginning, it'll be the Jewish people that bow to you, but in the end, when Mashiach will come, the whole world will pay homage to the grandson, the descendant of Yehuda, who is Mashiach. And so in verse 9, Yaakov Avinu says, Gur Aryeh, Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion cub. Miteref bni Olisa. From the prey, my son, you raised yourself. Kora rovatz karye, you crouch like a lion. Uchalavi mi kemenu, and like a young lion who rises. So this is a difficult verse. I should point out that all the verses here, all these verses of blessing, are not pshut shel mikra. They're not to be taken in the most literal form, because Father Jacob here uses much euphemism and spiritual poetry. And has to be very, very well elaborated, well elucidated and understood. We're just going to take a look at this one verse. So the first question is, Gur Aryeh, a young lion. Who is this young lion that he refers to? Yehuda is not so young right now. And clearly, later on he refers to a regular lion, and now he's referring to a lion, so who is this? So Rashi says, Al David Nisnabe. This is a prophecy with regard to King David, who, of course, is from the tribe of Yehuda. Shebetchila, that at the beginning of his monarchy, Nimshol Gur, he is metaphorized as a cub. Because Shaul HaMelech had ruled over all of Israel, and David HaMelech was still very much active. He wasn't like a stranger who came in from the cold. David HaMelech was the one who led them in battle from the days of Goliath, when the Jewish people overcame Goliath and the Philistines. Like it says in the Pasuk, not just today, but yesterday and before that, Behiyeis Shol Melech Aleinu, when Saul was king over us, Ata Hayisa Hameitziv Hamevias Yisrael, you were the one who took out and brought back Israel. So in the beginning, David was like a young strapping lion. He was the one who, with bravery and courage, led the Jewish people. But that's even before he was the king. But in the end, Aryeh. David HaMelech is metaphorized as a lion. And of course, the imagery we think of with David HaMelech is always a lion. You know, the modern day ancient city of Jerusalem has a lion as its symbol. It's the city of David. Kishim lichu aleihem, when all of the Jewish people appointed David as king over them. And this was after the passing of Shaul. Then he was already a lion. The Zehu Shatirgam Unkelus, this is what Unkelus renders, Shiltan Yehei B'Sheiruya. He says in the beginning, the David HaMelech's leadership had, so to speak, had a scepter in hand. However, in the end, that's only B'Tchilashi, that's in the beginning. In the beginning, he was scepter in hand, meaning like leader in hand. He was doing what the Jewish people needed insofar as leadership is concerned. But then in the end, David HaMelech rises to be the Melech Al Kol Yisrael, the king over all of Israel. So that's the first thing. The first thing is that Yehuda is being told that it's from his progeny that royalty is going to come, that a great king is going to arise, will establish the royal house of the Jewish people. Miteref. So what's the connection between David HaMelech and Miteref B'ni Olisa? From prey, you raise yourself, my son. So Rashi explains to us, in the beginning, Yaakov was very suspicious of Yehuda. He thought that Yehuda must have been the one who actually got rid of Yosef. And the reason was because Yehuda was Melech Shebe'echov. Yehuda was looked at as like the king of his brothers. They all looked up to him. He was the leader. And Yosef was his rival. So Yaakov, subconsciously, or maybe even consciously, suspicious of Yehuda, that he got rid of Yosef because, you know, it was his competition. So Rashi says, Mima shechashadeticha. For this that I had raised suspicions against you. Betorif toyref Yosef. Yosef was devoured. Chayra halosu. A wild animal had devoured him. Which this wild animal could metaphorically have been Yehuda, the lion. Vezel Yehuda. This is Yehuda shenim shel Ari. So now I saw afterwards that it was wrong. Bni Olisa. Olisa, Rashi says, means to lift yourself. Salakta asatzmecha. Like we use the word for passing of a tzaddik, we say histalkus. Histalkus means lifting. It's lifting. You lifted yourself from this. Ve'amarta, you said, ma betza. What profit do we have from killing our brother? V'chein. And here also, Rashi tells us, is being alluded, what's being alluded to is harigas tamar, the possibility of tamar's execution. Shehoide, that Yehuda acknowledged, he admitted, he said, I'm wrong. It's me. I'm the guy. Tzadka himimenu, she's right. She's right. I was the one who withheld my son from her. I was the one who put her in this situation. Lefichach, therefore, because this is the case, because Yehuda was able to rise himself above the sale of Yosef, or above at least the killing of Yosef, and above the execution of Tamar, kara ravatz, that's why he'll crouch like a lion, which means crouching like a lion is a euphemistic reference and referral to Yemei Shleima, to the days of Shleima HaMelech. That it says in the time of Shleima HaMelech that the Jewish people settled all in their homes, ish tachas gafnei, each one under his vineyard, and each one under his teina, his date tree. In other words, why is Malchus, why is royalty going to remain in the dominion of Yehuda? Why will it be David HaMelech, who's the Gur Aryeh? Why will it be Kara Ravatz, Shachav Ka'aryeh, the lion that crouches, and everybody's afraid of the lions, everybody just runs away, which is the description of how things will be in the time of Shleima HaMelech. Why? Because Yehuda removed himself. Because Yehuda could have gone forward and killed Yosef, or could have ignored Tamar's pleas and saw her executed. And nobody would have been any wiser. And yet, Yehuda didn't. He acknowledged what he did was wrong, and in doing so, he demonstrated the qualities that are needed for monarchy, for kingship. Now, presumably, it was Yehuda's piety that's being praised over here. Yehuda behaved piously. He did the right thing. Now, this raises an enormous question. The enormous question is as follows. Inasmuch as we talk about the idea of Yehuda raising himself above the situation, like Reb Sadia Gaon even interprets the entire verse about Yosef. He says that you were like a lion who crouched and, you know, the brothers had to listen to you. He says the whole pasuk is talking about the Mechiras Yosef. So nonetheless, when they were selling Yehuda, it says, he's selling Yosef, the Sefarno says, he took a secondary role. He crouched like a lion. Yehuda didn't attack. He didn't do what he could have done and damaged as he could have done. Because he could have done whatever he wanted. And he was the one who had the most to lose. Because Yehuda saw himself as being the king amongst his brothers. Yosef was his competition. So this is the reason that Yehuda merits what we call monarchy. The question is, Reuven also was pious. Reuven also did tshuva for his misdeeds. And he is roundly criticized. He gets no credit whatsoever. Not only that, it would seem on the surface that Yehuda's tshuva was much more meaningful. And yet, Yehuda's piety earns him the Jewish monarchy, and Reuven's piety seems to have earned him nothing but criticism. And the question, of course, is why? So let's take a look now. The Rebbe speaks about the difference between Yehuda and Yosef. I like to call it practical piety. as you'll see. So take a look in the Biura Chumash, the Biura book, page Shim Mem Ches. After quoting this Rashi, the analysis of the Rebbe begins. In the words of Rashi, it seems very clear. Yehuda zocha l'malchus, that Yehuda merited malchus, shebemekoira haisa shayeches l'Reuven, which at its source is something that Reuven should have had. He was the firstborn. He should have had the malchus. And the reason was, b'schus shnei inyanim elu. That was because of the merit of these two things. Number one, hatzolas Yosef. Number one, the saving of Yosef. Number two, v'haido al chete b'maise Tamar. Because he acknowledged, he admitted that he did the wrong thing in the story of Tamar. So the Rebbe asks, "Vadover derish biur?" This is to be understood. Sharei Maile Seilo Atzman Hayu Af BeRuven. Exactly these two virtues were found by Reuven also, and not only these two virtues were found with regard to Reuven, B'Midah Rabba Yosef. It seems that with regard to Reuven, these were found in a greater measure. Let's talk about Atzolus Yosef. Hadei Reuven Paul Gamla Atzolus Yosef. It wasn't only Yehuda who tried to save Yosef. Reuven also made an attempt. They wanted to kill him. How did Reuven stop them? Reuven said, "Leina kenu nafesh. Let's not smite a soul. Let's not try to kill somebody." Va'adrabba, the Rebbe suggests, "Ma'aseh shel Reuven gedolei Yosef." The efforts of Reuven were even greater. Shadi Yehuda, Amar Yehuda said, "Ma betzar kinari gesachinu." What profit is there? A profit. And this is mitoich kavana laharviach mammon. Seems that this whole intention was to earn a buck. Reuven says, let's save him. Why? The Torah says why. He wanted to restore him to Yaakov Avinu. So Reuven wants to restore him to Yaakov and doesn't get involved in killing him. And that's not so good. Big deal. But Yehuda, who said, you know, we can make money off this. Why should we kill him if we can make a living? He's a big tzaddik here. And he merits the concept of monarchy. Question one. Question two. We say that Yehuda's uniqueness was Haido al Chait, because he accepted responsibility for his sins. Very few people accept responsibility. Maybe get up and say, yes, I did the wrong thing, accept responsibility, forgive me. Very few people do that. But Reuven also did that. Reuven had a sin in which he meddled in his father's private affairs, which is considered as if he mounted his father's bed. That wasn't literal, but he was telling his father where to sleep and telling his father how to run his life. And this is a terrible sin. Va'af asak b'meshach shanim rabis b'tshuva kach. Reuven spent many years doing tshuva. He felt bad about his behavior. In fact, we read in Rashi that the reason Yehuda Reuven wasn't there by the sale of Yosef was because he was asak b'sakya b'tanisei. He was busy doing his meditation and his lamenting. That was 9 years later. 9 years later, here we have Reuven is sitting and doing tshuva. It seems that Reuven does it better than Yehuda. Yehuda, in sharp contrast to Reuven, if Yehuda wouldn't have admitted, what would happen to Tamar? Should be killed. So he had to do it. For Reuven, why did he have to do tshuva? Who was he saving? What duress was he under? It's 9 years later. Yaakov already forgave him. The family is whole already. And so the Rebbe asks a very good question. How did Yehuda wear it better? How did Yehuda do it? How is he more pious? Because of his piety, he merits to have monarchy instated and coming from his progeny. The Rebbe gives us a gewaldic answer. This is mamash a very good lesson, unbelievable lesson for life. Hatnai habasisi lemalchus, the fundamental and foundational condition for any kind of monarchy is what? What does the king have to do? Does the king need to be wise? A king should be wise. What if a king is not wise? Not wise, okay. There have been unwise kings. He has to get good advisors. Does the king have to be handsome? It's nice when the king's handsome. What if he's not handsome? I don't know, put on makeup, wear ermine robes, do something. Does the king have to be capable? If he's not capable, again, good advisors will be around him, capable people around him. What's the one thing that a king needs to have? What does it mean, leadership?
Care about his son.
Oh, he has to care. Hadaigo l'tevis hazulus. He has to be concerned. He has to experience a sense of anxiety even. A deep concern for his constituents. If the king doesn't care about his constituents, he ain't no king. Sha'arei tafkida shel ha-melech. The purpose of a king is lidag l'tzarche ha-medina v'yishveh. So you have a leader of a country who's more interested in philosophy or in radical ideas, but doesn't actually care about the people that live in the country. He's a lousy leader. That's not the leader you need. What's the leader you need? The leader who cares about the citizens of that country. De Gaulle, who is no tzaddik, but a pretty smart guy, once said, he said, countries don't have allies, they have interests. They have interests. A real leader, a real government cares about its citizenry. It doesn't care about citizens of the world. It doesn't take responsibility for the globe. It cares about its citizens first. That's the meaning of a leader. And a leader who doesn't care about his or her own citizens is not a leader of a country. It could be all kinds of things. Be a great philosopher. He cannot be the leader of a country. He can't be a king. V'lochein, the question is, k'dei l'das mi'o aroi l'mlucha. Yaakov has to make this fateful decision. Hashem puts it in Yaakov's hands. You make the decision. You decide who is going to be the progenitor of the Jewish people insofar as royalty is concerned. Maisim toivim, piety, good deeds, kavana ritzuya, nice intentions, not good enough. There's a not nice place. The road over there is paved with good intentions. Not good enough. Good intentions is not good. What do we have to look at? Eliyash livchein ketzad maasim elu hishpio v'siu lezulas b'peil. What happened? Practically. What practically came out of the piety? If the piety has a practical good, if practical good came for the people, then that's piety. Otherwise, it's piety which is useless because it doesn't have any practical impact. Ube'inyin zeh, nikeres ma'alasa shel Yehuda al Reuven. There's an amazing virtue. Yehuda far eclipses Reuven. Omnam Reuven ratza lahatzlas Yosef. It's true. Reuven had good intentions. He did want to save Yosef. V'lochein, therefore, he'd see Alechavim, said, suggest to his brothers, Leila Haragis, let's not kill him. What should we do? Lashlicha lebayir, throw him into a pit. Avol bepoil, what happened? Hu loy hevi leYosef tiyalas rabba. What did he do for Yosef? Nothing. He had him spend a half hour with snakes and scorpions. So God had to make a miracle and the snakes and scorpions shouldn't bite him. What happened as a result? Hashlochas Yosef lebayir lehitzilu Yosef misakonas. It did not save him from the danger of starvation because there was nothing to eat or drink in there. It did not save him from the danger of starvation of snakes and scorpions. So, Reuven, you know, thanks a lot for that one. But what did you accomplish? Zero. Garnished with garnished. As they say, GNG. Nothing. Ulo umazais. Conversely, Yehuda. Yehuda doesn't sound so pious as Reuven. Reuven says, let's save him. We have to bring him back to dad. Sounds very pious. Yehuda said, we could make a buck. Who sounds more pious? Yehuda does not sound so pious. However, practically speaking, what happened? He got sold and saved. Now he's the king because of it. Let's talk about tshuva. Reuven acknowledged, I did a sin. I sinned. Father, I sinned. Okay, fine. He's busy lamenting and self-mortification. It's very nice. 9 years later, it's amazing, a very pious man. All of this is to atone for what he did. What did the piety do for anybody else? Once again, Reuven stars in GNG. Gornish mit Gornish. He didn't accomplish anything. Because Reuven was busy lamenting and involved in self-mortification, you know what happened? He wasn't there for Yosef. When he came back to the pit, he says, hey, where's Yosef? They said, we sold him. Don't worry, we saved some money for you too. He says, no, I want you to save him. Well, where were you? I was busy with self-mortification. I was busy rolling on the anthills and rolling in the snow. I was busy beating my breast and busy... What happened as a result? Yosef was sold. That's what happened as a result. Dover shehevi l'mchirasei. The fact that he went away to do his mortification, to do his piety, not only didn't bring some practical good, it brought practically, it seems, the opposite. B'sefer shel Dover, in the end, it brings to Golus Mitzrayim, which is the Shadish, the source of all Golias. So if Reuven would be a little less pious then, and would have just taken Yosef home like he said he would, be a different reality. Lo mazais kish Yehuda haydal kate. When Yehuda acknowledges sin, after tshuva silo haysim mushlemish. It wasn't such a great tshuva like Reuven. He didn't come on his own 9 years later. Still, he got a message that Tamar is getting executed, and she said, "Hakerna, you happen to recognize this little items I have over here? Maybe you know what these artifacts are." Oh, Yehuda Reuven takes a look at Svetim Schwarzenegger, as they say. He said, "Oh my God, I know who this is. This is mine. Oh, this is yours. So what are you going to do about it?" So here, even though his tshuva wasn't so great, and he was, so to speak, forced into it, nonetheless, who got him lekach latzilasa shel Tamar. As a result of his piety, what happened? Tamar was saved. Exactly. Uketitzah mekach, and as a result of that, leidasa shel Peretz, the birth of Peretz. Shemimenu from Peretz ba malchus beis David. Peretz is the progenitor of the house of David. Shemimenu yaveh melech Mashiach. It's from Peretz that even in his name it's encoded that he is the one who will bring into the world the King Mashiach. Ligoy les Yisrael. So from Reuven's tshuva came galus. And from Reuven's tshuva came Geula. And that, my dear friends, is the meaning of practical piety. Practical piety is, it's very nice to be pious. What happens to somebody else as a result?